So hi everybody, rock good morning and welcome to the class and those online, I'm glad you're there. So we begin with our class six today on the spiritual teacher, and just as we normally do, we'll do a short breathing meditation where we allow the body to relax and the mind to be present. Then we'll set a motivation and engage in the visualizations. So please get comfortable in your seat. Just relax. Let the body breathe itself. And feeling the body breathe itself. Relax into awareness. And from within awareness, imagine the environment completely pure and all the space filled with offerings made by gods and men. And in the space in front of you appears a lion throne. And on that throne are cushions of lotus, sun, and moon. Now the moon seat sits Buddha Shakyamuni. So consider the qualities of the teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. And then notice that he is surrounded by the deities, bodhisattvas, other Buddhas, hearers, solitary conquerors, and other enlightened masters. And recollect that while you are in the presence of these enlightened beings, you have the opportunity and the leisure to develop your own spiritual path. We need to do this quickly. The things do not exist in the way they appear to us. And although things are not quite right, attaining our spiritual goals is up to us. And while this is true, we can also call upon the assistance of the enlightened beings and direct our lives into a safe direction. So decide to do this not just for yourself, but for all sentient beings. And then join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Now imagine that from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectars stream down and dissolve into yourself and all the living beings surrounding you. These lights and nectars purify past negative karma and obstructions. They increase your lifespan, your virtues, and your Dharma realizations. Let us rest in the natural purity of the mind. And as the mind has been cleansed by wisdom and love, recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings in those four states. Then join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this wish of ours, from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down and dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. The lights and nectars purify negative karma and obstructions. They increase your lifespan, your virtues, and your Dharma realizations. Let yourself relax into the natural purity. And decide to gather the merit needed for your spiritual path by inviting the field for accumulating merit. They appear. We say before them, reverently I prostrate my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since the beginning of this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. We have purified the mind somewhat. We have accumulated some merit. What we do not wish to do right now is to cling to these two objects as being truly existent. To stop that, we imagine our body turning into a wonderful pure lamp. We're going to offer this to the teacher and the entourage. The thing now that your body has taken on the form of the universe itself. It's been naturally purified into a pure lamp. And we say to the Buddha, the Bodhisattvas of the merit field, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, the dawn of Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field of offering. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam Mandala Kamnariyatayahami. The offering has been released and accepted. And the Buddha smiles at us. And we look up into his face and meet his gaze. So looking into the eyes of the Buddha, you find immense humility, kindness, wisdom, and compassion. And you make a request to your teacher who's sitting in the field of accumulating merit to ask him to please come and sit on a lotus and moon suit that's on your crown and to help you attain the attainments of the body, speech, and mind of an enlightened being. So your root guru emerges from the field for accumulating merit, comes to sit on the seat, it's above your crown. And with you makes these following requests to the lineage masters. So ask that inspiring blessings are poured down upon yourself and all the mothers who surround you. To quickly stop all perverse minds from disrespect for our kind teacher to the most subtle dualistic appearance. The blessings will pour down so they quickly direct pure minds from respect for our kind teacher to the supreme mind of union. And inspiring blessings pour down to pacify all outer, inner, and secret obstructions. In response to this request of your master and yourself, streams of light and nectar flow down. They purify the mind and they grant blessings. But now recollect anything you can of the three principal aspects of the path. Now imagine, from the heart of Buddha Shakyamuni, infinite light rays emanate, reaching all environments and all beings, which dissolve into light and gradually gather into the field of merit. The field of merit dissolves into the central figure, Buddha Shakyamuni, who now dissolves into your root guru at the crown of your head, instantly transforming him into the aspect of Guru Buddha Shakyamuni. The aspect of Guru Buddha Shakyamuni in the crown of your head begins to diminish in size, enters through your crown, and descends down to your heart. The mind of the Guru Buddha and your mind become one singular nature. And within that nature, you hear the mantra of Shakyamuni Buddha, and you begin to recite it yourself. Ayatam Mahamunayaso Now from your heart, rays of light fill the 10 directions of space. And every sentient being abiding within space is utterly transformed, is the fully awakened state. Then these rays of light start returning from the 10 directions of space. They re-enter your heart. You can feel the body breathing itself. Different sounds are heard. And you know you're sitting down meditating. And the visualization is one of imagination, which has imprinted the mind with the potential for your own full awakening for the benefit of others. And take heart in that. Think that I've done something useful and meaningful this morning. And now, in your own time, just breathe in deeply through your nostrils. Then exhale through the mouth. Let your eyes flutter open. And in your own time, move your body. Bring presence to the environment you're in and to your own breath. So this is teaching six. So we've gone through a bit of material already. We began with the need for a spiritual teacher. So we need a teacher to gather the two accumulations and to purify the mind of the two obscurations, because we basically don't know how to do that. The teachers we need to rely upon have to be fully qualified teachers. This means, in terms of the Mahayana teachings, they need to have those 10 qualities. So the first three are the three higher trainings. And they need to have the three higher types of knowledge. That, in other words, they need to know more than we do. They need to have a vast knowledge of the scriptures. They also have to know about the wisdom realizing emptiness from the middle way consequence point of view. Finally, they need to have four qualities to deal with us. So they need to be skillful, to have abandoned any dispiritedness in teaching the same thing again and again. Their teaching has to come out of a love and concern for others. And they need to be enthusiastic about what they're doing. They need to be enthusiastic about helping others, in other words. Now, the role of the teacher, of course, is to introduce us to our own inner potential for awakening. We need to bring some qualities of our own to the table, so to speak. So we need to just be like non-biased, bring intelligence to the meeting with the teacher, and to be sort of greatly diligent. Two other qualities mentioned by Chandrakirti are to be attentive and respectful. There are many, many benefits of developing a guru devotion. The main ones, of course, are to put an end to suffering and release the inner potential for happiness that we have. So basically, by relying upon a qualified teacher, we can go through all the different stages of the path and attain our spiritual goal. Now, to present the material, I've relied upon these particular books here. And as I've said again and again, I always recommend Relating to Spiritual Teachers. We should all read that. But if it's quite in depth, as a beginner, the first book I'd suggest, The Foundations of Buddhist Practice, that book there in the middle, with the Buddha standing up there. This is presented by His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Venerable Thupten Jinpa. It's really simple to read, and what we're talking about is covered in a chapter. Now, today we're going to look at the topic called training in faith, which is underneath the byline called the attitudes of the student. And the major thing we're trying to do here is to try to see the guru as a Buddha. Now, the founder of our tradition, Lama Tsongkhapa, he uniquely prioritized guru devotion in the Buddhist teachings. In the other traditions, this topic will come about midway, usually just after taking a refuge or just before it. So it really depends upon the disposition of the student, I guess. So if you find it difficult to get your head around the first topic, then you can move it. There's other places you can come at it. He puts it first, basically because he's teaching to a monastic community. So you are already in a school, so of course you have to rely upon a teacher. That's the first topic. However, this approach emphasizes the importance of a student-teacher relationship from the outset. And understanding the benefits and potential are pitfalls of guru devotion early will help us navigate the spiritual path more carefully. So that's our major topic today, is about this training in faith. There isn't an outline in the text for this. There's no outline for this in the Lamrim Chenmo, for instance. But when Kinsa Rinpoche taught this to us, he said, well, we can make an outline. So he did. And it's got five parts. First, you look at what faith is, and you look at the benefits of having faith. Then you look at these reasons to perceive the guru as a Buddha, the necessity for doing so, how to develop the perception, and finally, this idea that appearances are deceptive. So faith and devotion in Buddhism center on cultivating trust and appreciation for the mentor or the teacher, the guru. And this involves reflecting on the mentor's qualities and kindness, and then perceiving them as fully enlightened beings. So the last two parts, developing the perception and appearances are deceptive, this is really asking us to recognize the unreliability of ordinary appearances and personal opinions. This is quite crucial in developing this sort of faith-based perspective. Now, I know that most of us, when we hear the word faith, especially if we're coming from a Western thing, it's like warning bells go off. At least they did for me. You know, if any of you grew up in the 70s, if you're like a teenager in the 70s, you'll remember how the Eastern gurus came over to this side of the world and all the scandals that took place and all the heartache that Western students went through. And even before that, if you relied upon Christian mentors, there's a lot of problems with that too. So if you've gone through that, you'd be wary. And so just hearing the word faith, it's sort of is, from, I don't know about you guys, but for me, the first thing I think about faith is blind faith. You're just required to believe something. And I go, I'm not doing that. So I'll tell you now, this type of faith is not the faith we're talking about here. There's an aspect of it, but we'll come to that straight away. So let's have a look here as well. Let's look at first of all what faith is, and then we'll look at its benefits. So faith is described as the doorway through which all positive qualities manifest. The faith in Buddhism expands understanding and cultivates positive qualities. That's its function. It counteracts disbelief, non-admiration, and non-wishing, while fostering aspirations for wholesome traits. In guru devotion, faith means firmly believing the teacher is a Buddha. So interesting, in guru devotion, faith means firmly believing the teacher is a Buddha. So this requires, if you think about this, it means so faith could mean something else within a different context. So the Buddha says faith is the prerequisite of all good qualities, a procreator of them, like a mother, who then protects and increases them. It clears away doubts, frees you from the four rivers, and establishes you in the prosperous city of happiness and goodness. Now, when you look at this, this is an interesting topic, this faith. So when the there are some in the Lam Chenma, there's a huge section on this. And just talking about all the good qualities of faith, basically. And they've got all these different types of similes. Then if you have a look at the Nyingma text on the Dzogchen, there's a again a full chapter on faith. Yeah? And it's just full of similes. The Mahamudra text, it's the same. So again, what I'm talking about here is the different traditions, the Kagyu on the Mahamudra, the Nyingma on the Dzogchen. Big focus on faith and devotion. Here, as you can see, the Gelugpa tradition is put up right front and center. And again, they always talk about the good qualities first. Why do you think they do that?
The good qualities of what?
Of faith.
Of faith.
Yeah.
Incentive?
That's right. And see, it's like, look how great this is. Wouldn't you like that faith? That's the point of putting it all up there, telling you about how wonderful it all is. Yes, yeah, you could say that. Yeah. Helps us, yeah, it's a guide. Actually, faith is seen as we go through, that's one of the similes they use. Yeah. And this one is a mother. I think it's birth to all good qualities. So mothers give birth to children. Here, faith is seen as the mental factor that gives birth to all the good qualities. Yeah, and then protects them like a mother. Yeah.
So it seems like faith actually is more like process rather than like a belief.
Yeah,
Here, like
which yes, it is.
clears away.
Process coming right up. Right. So yes, faith is seen as a process, as a development, a sequence. You go through different stages of development, and they're all called faith, but you end up with what's called this wishing faith. So the first type of faith is called beginner's faith. And this is the initial faith when starting on a spiritual path. It involves some enjoyment in the practice, but may also include elements of blind faith. So this is just like you just believe it. You haven't actually checked it out yet. So many of us do it because like it feels good,
Give it a go.
looks good, we'll give it a go. There's no investigation. When we investigate the objects of faith, we end up with clear faith. It's based on reason. And because the objects of faith appear so clearly to us, we wish to have them. But here we're looking at the teacher, right? We're looking at the qualities of the teacher. They appear clearly to us. We see them. We want to go, that's how I want to be. When we see the Buddha statues, that's the process. We recognize we're not looking at a piece of gold thing like that. Of course, that's what's appearing to our eyes. But remember I said to you when we took refuge, recollect the qualities of the Buddha. When we do that, we have faith in those qualities, and then we want to be like that. This is just like what you used to do, at least I did when I was a kid, and I had all the pictures of my rock gods, you know, guitar heroes up on the walls, right? You go, I want to be like that. You've heard them play, you know they're really good. You want to be like that. It's a similar type of process. And so like a beginner's faith might be where, you know, like for me, I've gone up to the pool room. I used to go up there every day. My mate comes out and he's got Axis Bold as Love under his arm. Right? Anybody ever seen that cover? Right? So it's a Jimi Hendrix album with an amazing cover on it. Right? And so I saw that cover and I go, wow, look, what's that? You know, Jimi Hendrix, man, he's just amazing. I've never heard of him. But he's telling me all this and I sort of believe it because he's my mate. That's just the beginning, the beginner's faith. Right? And then, of course, I've got to go and listen. So I do. They go, wow, man, this guy's great. It's a similar sort of thing here with your teachers, with the Buddha. You hear about it, you don't know yet, but you might see how enthusiastic the person is talking to you about it. You might see they're quite peaceful, they've got a really nice way about it. You talk a little bit more, you investigate. Your investigation is to develop this clear faith. It depends upon clearly seeing that these qualities exist. You decide yourself, I want to be like that. So, remember that the clear faith. It's important for us because the qualities of the guru are evident. So, I remember when I first met Kinsa Rinpoche, Geshe-Tashi Seren, the quality that was evident to me was like power and wisdom. It took a long time for me to see beneath that the gentleness. This is not the case in every lama you'll see. Some it's the gentleness that pops straight out at you. You know, you go, wow. One time I had the experience of meeting great lama, and what popped out to me was the humility. But it's just absolutely stunning. And then when you taught, the power, man, the power. It's just like, wow, this old, fragile 80-odd-year-old man sitting there on the throne, and then the words like boomed out. And so concise. Everything was just like, no wasted words, very brief, but boy, they hit you. And in fact, many of the audience were in tears listening to it. So these qualities, sort of the qualities being evident to you. Well, of course, you know, you go to the text, you read up, you study, you try to use reasoning as well. You want your, most of us, when we first meet great teachers, reason is not the thing that pops up, but it's feeling. You have an emotion, they impact you emotionally. You want this, and you want your emotion supported with reason, not just, don't go just on emotion. So faith in Buddhism evolves from this initial belief in faith to a deep conviction through clear understanding and reasoning. The clear faith, the most crucial type, dispels doubts and establishes a stable trust in the teacher and his teaching. So this well-founded trust enables the development of our own inner qualities and also inspires devotion to them. This clear faith leads, like I said, to wishing faith. And so a wish is an aspiration. And here is, and this is the basis for joyous perseverance. But because it's going to require some effort on our part, isn't it? And this effort should be one flourishing with joy. Now, it's like that, like I said, I myself, or the people I knew when I was growing up as kids, when they heard Jimi Hendrix, when they heard really good music, they nearly all went out and bought guitars. That's what everybody did in the 60s and 70s, right? Anyone who saw the Beatles, that's what they did. You're wow, I want to be like that. You realize what could be done. And you have to practice, of course. And practice is not easy, but if you really set your goal on it, it becomes joyful. Especially when you can start singing in your family joins and you bring some joy to other people, right? You're encouraged. It's the same here. It should not be like a hard slog to us. If there is, there's something not quite right here. We need to probably talk to a teacher about this. So we really want to become like the teacher. We want to become like the Buddha. But fulfilling our own wishes and the wishes of others. So here, I hope you can see that the faith progresses, you know, through those three stages. There's that initial trust, which is sort of what we call believing faith. Then there's the conviction that comes out of the clarity. And then there's this aspiration, the wish to become like the Buddha, like our teacher. And the thing here is to we wish to embody the qualities of the master. So again, another quote from the Buddha, he says, faith is the best of vehicles through which you will be guided and definitely emerge. So we're talking about renunciation. Therefore, intelligent people rely on following faith. Wholesome qualities do not grow in people who have no faith, just as green sprouts do not grow from seeds scorched by fire. So faith is basically the foundation for developing these virtuous qualities. And this is much like a seed that grows into a flourishing plant. So in its early stages, faith nurtures the goodness and it protects it from negativity and eventually leads to our own liberation from suffering and its causes. And without that faith, true inner growth can't happen. So, any questions you'd like to ask? Anything interesting pop up, pop to mind? Miffy?
I'm wondering if it's some misplaced kind of humility, but I so often hear in Dharma centers people talk about how they'll never be able to be like the guru and how they're so far away and it's like they're really in the doldrums. So it's not really like even scorched by fire, it's more like a soggy old seed of, rather than like when you're saying about Jimi Hendrix, no one goes, oh no, I'll never be like Jimi Hendrix. You don't care, you just like go, let's give it a go. There's an enthusiasm there. So what's happening in this? Is it a Western thing? Is it a Tibetan thing?
Probably much more a Western thing, but it's certainly not in the mind of Tibetans. They don't think like that. But they've got a lot of confidence about themselves. Well, Westerns, most of our confidence has been bashed out of us. But again, it's this whole idea of looking at what is a guru. So this is where... most people, I think, when they come to guru devotion, they look at the outer aspect of the teacher, right? And they think, oh, I could never be like this teacher. But again, this is like this idea, but you know, the people who think they can never play like Jimi Hendrix will never be able to. Those who think they could become just like that. But if you think you can't, you're right. If you think you can, you're also right. So one thing is looking at the outer aspect and say, I can never be like them, right? And so, well, what are you looking at? So, well, that person there. So, well, that's one aspect of guru devotion. The other guru devotion, you're completely like them. What do you mean? You go, the guru, the inner guru, the mind. There's no difference between your mind and Shakyamuni Buddha's mind or anybody else's mind. The nature of that mind's exactly the same. So you don't have to try to become like that. You are like that. Of course, you have inner temporary obstacles that prevent you from even acknowledging that. It's true, but I ask you, describe the nature of your mind. And just like what you're doing there, that's it, right? It's the same with everybody here. So when you get confused, oh, hey, guess what? We're all confused, aren't we? Well, it depends how you go in. Debbie.
It was interesting when you were talking about the three kinds of faith, because sometimes, like when I first came to Buddhism, I would read stories like about Jetsu Tenzin Palmo and how, you know, when she saw her teacher, she knew, and you think, oh, wow, you know, they've got this amazing connection. But for me, it was never like that. Like I really, my respect for His Holiness grew because I wanted to find out how he could forgive the Chinese who had taken so much away. And it was from that kind of logical reading of how he did it, that's where my, I guess the more the emotions came up then, because I was like, wow, this is someone who really walks the talk. So I don't know, I just thought it was interesting that people come at it from different, like some of us have a lot of emotion at the start, others not so much, and yeah.
Yeah, so this is, so what's your name? This is a number of different ways you can come at this. So as Holiness has said, and other teachers too, that if you look, if you come at it first of all from the point of the human being, right, you go, it was a person who, before he was called Shakyamuni Buddha, was an ordinary sentient being like us. And so is it the human? And so you know that he was living in that palace. What he had was not enough. But he was still not happy. He still recognized, he still realized he was suffering, just like us. Right? Then he decided to do something about it. So did we. Here we are. He spent 7 years austerities on what seemed like the wrong path, not actually finding the right way, just like us, right? We try to find the right way, we make all sorts of mistakes. Then he remembered something that happened in his past as that child sitting under the apple tree, and he said, my gosh, it's quite straightforward. I just need to relax. I had this one, I had that experience when I was a child. But perhaps that's it. He went back and tried, and he found that this was the case. So the same with us, right? Come back to the natural mind, something you already had. You recognize it. That's what we have to do. We have to recognize the nature of the mind. It was all suffering comes from the mind, but so does enlightenment. It's a source. You found a way to get at that source, which you call the path. The fruit of that path was his own enlightenment. So it's a human being. Right? So we can come at it from that aspect. Or else you could come at it from another aspect and go, yeah, that, what we call Buddha, that's your awakened mind. That's right with us right now. So we've got to find the way that works for us. And that's why there's so many different ways of getting there in Tibetan Buddhism. To, you know, otherwise, other things people might be really impressed with, like Miller Raper, you know, those great stories. You go, well, that's great. Yeah? That could be the thing. You take that type of inspiration, away you go. If you wish to combine the both, and sometimes if you're really discouraged, you know, you can look, well, hang on a minute. There's just these ordinary people. I've read about them. They've made these huge changes. I'm an ordinary person. I'm discouraged. Other people have been discouraged. If they tried, just requires me to try. What do I need to do? Just need to sit there and relax, first of all. Calm down. Really straightforward, it's not hard. Just calm down. Breathe. Get yourself present. You'll find you're in the natural freedom right there. There are so many ways of getting it. You've got to find the way that suits you. There is our first invitation. Okay? So please. Just get comfortable in your seat. And maybe begin by taking, first of all, a deep breath. So breathing in deeply. And exhale. Let your body relax into a comfortable position. Then do this again. Deep breath. Exhale. Release tension and distraction. Make space for insight. Now, for the benefit of all beings, set your intention to nurture faith and devotion for your spiritual path. Now, imagine But you're holding a tiny seed in your hand. Look at it and think, this seed represents the start of a faith journey. This seed of faith, when cared for, can grow into a magnificent plant. But just as this seed needs the right conditions, our faith needs guidance from an authentic spiritual teacher. Now you've got that seed in the palm of your hand. I want you to imagine you're now going to plant that seed in rich soil. It symbolizes your trust in a wise mentor. Now I wonder how your own spiritual practice might change if you saw your teacher as a Buddha. The Buddha, of course, is a fully awakened being, has all positive qualities, has no negative qualities, has an omniscient mind, has only care and devotion towards you. So seeing your teacher as a Buddha, how might your practice change? So viewing or seeing your teacher as a Buddha will deepen your faith, like watering the seed. It's as if this water carries your teacher's wisdom, helping your faith grow stronger. Can you recall a time when you naturally felt trust towards a spiritual teaching or teacher? This is like the first tender shoot of your faith breaking through the soil, reaching for light. So just as a young plant needs protection from harsh elements, your faith needs shielding from doubt. So how could cultivating clear faith based on reasoning strengthen your practice? When this class is finished today, reflect on your teacher's positive qualities and let your faith blossom like a thriving plant. And as we conclude the meditation, take a deep breath, carrying the image of your faith. Exhale. Let it grow into a beautiful fruit-bearing tree. And let your eyes open now. Blink a little, move a little, bring your awareness back a little. So again, remember you are your own guru. You need the assistance of an outer guru. Your mind is guru. This is a phenomenon that's going to be heavy with good qualities. That's the meaning of guru, right? Heavy with good qualities. Only place heavy with good qualities can only be your mind. You have to have some faith in that. You have good qualities now, all they need to do is be nurtured. You just assist of an outer teacher. But now we move to the second session, that the major portion of this is these reasons to see your teacher as a Buddha. So here are the four reasons they use. And these four reasons stem from the Vajrayana Buddhist traditions. That's a, in other words, the tantric perspective. It's to enhance your concentration and to make enlightenment feel attainable. It also prepares you for more advanced teachings. But again, this concept is crucial to understand. You really want to avoid misunderstandings here. There are many, many Western students who have got this wrong and suffered a lot for it. That's why, again, I suggest you read the Burzin book before you take this. If you're going to take this on, read the Burzin material so you don't make a mistake. So here are the four reasons. There's nothing to trust in our own view. Even nowadays, all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are still working for sentient beings. The guru is the doer of all the Buddha's actions, and Vajradhara asserted that the guru is a Buddha. We're going to each one of these, and I'll just preempt that with a quote by Prabhupada Rinpoche. He says, "Those with certain diseases are mistaken as to the objects of their perception. Since the minds of ordinary beings are made defective by ignorance, which projects hallucinations, how is it possible to see the guru as an actual Buddha?" They say that in a way this is not easy to do, right? Because as you know, he starts off by talking about the certain diseases. So oftentimes I talk about here certain eye diseases, where if like you have cataracts. And wherever you look, it appears there's things falling down. If you don't know you've got cataracts, you're going to think things are falling down,
Or
right? Or
astigmatism.
sting, yeah, also, yeah, things like this, right? I'm sure we've all had that happen to us. Something goes wrong physically, and the world looks completely different to us. And we think that what we're seeing is the reality, right? We don't realize, geez, there's something wrong with me. So Buddhist teachings emphasize the unreliability of ordinary perceptions and judgments. So this concept encourages students like us to question our own views and to avoid grasping onto perceived faults in others. By recognizing the potential inaccuracy of our perceptions, we can cultivate a more open and compassionate mindset. Thereby following examples like Asanga and Maitreya, if you've read those stories. So we begin with the first, there's nothing to trust in our own view. So what can you see there?
Big nose.
That's right. Certainly looks like there's somebody sitting there looking over the whole thing. But you can also see some lambs and there's a tree there, can't you?
Moustache.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, because you know, none of that's actually there, but that's what we're seeing. Right? Yeah. So actually what's there is like these two houses. There's a bloke leaning up against a tree and he's got a white shirt on, which looks like the moustache. And the doorways or the windows of the two houses look like two eyes. So he says, our perceptions are often unreliable due to inherent biases and accumulated negative imprints. Now, understanding this challenges the notion of objective reality. The sciences encourage us to believe in an objective reality for a long time, hundreds of years. Now they've discovered there isn't one. This is the discovery of the Buddhists for centuries beforehand. There's no objective reality. Reality is basically subjective, depends upon the viewer. You cannot remove the viewer and have an objective reality. That type of reality doesn't exist. So all appearances are merely imputed phenomena. So in other words, whatever appears to us is imputed by the mind and language, perception and conception. We create it. We're co-creators of our reality. Doesn't look it like it, but that's the fact. Because even the historical Buddha was perceived differently by various individuals. highlighting again the subjective nature of our experiences and judgments. So here, although everything appears to exist objectively in terms of their own nature, without being posited through the power of a subjective mind, they don't exist like that at all. Now, this is one of the bases of what they call the two truths, how phenomena exist and how they appear to exist. It's the foundation of all the Buddhist teachings, the two truths, just telling you here. Secondly, the necessity of seeing the future as a Buddha is because we want a prophet. This is love is over, not lost. Having the thought that a guru is an ordinary person will cause us to lose realizations, or having the thought that the guru is an actual Buddha will allow us to keep our realizations. You see, the practice of seeing one's teacher as a Buddha is primarily for the disciple's benefit, not the teacher's. This perspective enhances the disciple's potential for spiritual growth, including realizations along the path to enlightenment. Importantly, the blessings received depend on the disciple's faith and devotion, regardless of the teacher's actual level of enlightenment. We often do this a story told about this, right, where a great devotee of the Buddha and of Lama Tsongkhapa, old woman, he had a son who was a trader, and he'd go off to, what's the capital?
Lhasa.
Lhasa, right? So he'd go there to train and he'd come back. And she'd always say, bring me back a relic of the Buddha, please, dear. And he'd go, yeah, sure, mum. And every time he'd go, he'd forget. Right? He'd make the money, he'd do great trades, and he'd forget about getting the relic. He'd come home, the son would go, the mother would go, you have the relic? Oh, mum, I forgot. So he does this about two or three times, and she's getting a little discouraged about this. On the fourth time, he's coming back and he remembers, I forgot again. Right? But then he looks down the side of the road and sees a dead dog. So what he does, he goes over to the skull, pulls out one of the back teeth, and puts it in the thing and goes home. Right? Mother says, did you get the relic? He says, yeah, I did, Mum. It's all wrapped up in the stuff. But the silk I've got fits so precious. It's so clean. So then she puts it up on her mantelpiece. And each day she makes all these prayers to this, what she conceives to be the relic of the Buddha. And anyway, by doing so, she has all these changes that take place. This is what they call a blessing, and the mind changes. Now this demonstrates that the object doesn't actually have to be the thing that you think it is. Right? What you have to do is to think it is. Yeah, this is right. The effect is a real thing. It's a real phenomenon. Yeah, so there's a number of stories like this to demonstrate this, what we would call the placebo effect. The belief brings about changes in us. And this is the prophet. Whether the teachers are actual Buddha or not, that's not the thing. And it doesn't benefit them, it benefits you. It's the same idea of thinking like, which happened in the past, wasn't it? Where there are people who thought the Buddha was a charlatan. And so they made no spiritual progress at all. Their mind never changed. They had the doubt, then it became resentful, all the rest followed. Right? Because they thought, this person was like this. In fact, this could happen to us, and does, doesn't it? We think people are particular ways, and we get the effect, whether we're right or wrong about it.
Yeah, because like with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, if you're brought up in China and you have an idea that he's just like a political charlatan, there's no way to have any inspiration or be able to, get any realizations.
Yeah, in fact, many Chinese students who come to Australia, that's what they've been brought up to believe, right? The Dalai Lama is a fake, a charlatan, an enemy of China. So they have no, they've never thought or read about it, understand what he's doing. So, of course, this is exactly what they think. And this is just the same way of thinking, the Buddha is a fake, a charlatan. Knowing that makes a big difference, doesn't it? Because then you can decide. If you don't know, you make your decisions already made by the culture you're in. But knowing that the mind works like this, you can decide, wow, there's a huge benefit of looking at my teacher as if he were the Buddha himself. Whether he is or not, there's massive benefit in it. And like I said, it's up to you. You want a profit, you want to make realizations, and so forth. Remember, we've also looked at this whole the qualities of the teacher. It's not blind faith here. We've
I've
already
already
looked at
got the
it. We've
criteria.
already got the criteria. We've gone through this, the reasoning to get clear. We aspire to be like them. To help us be like them, we see them as being a Buddha. So you've got to remember context here, right? And narrative arc and flow, which is very easy to forget. It's easy to just take one aspect out and go and shoot it down. So here's the third reason. Even nowadays, all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas are working for sentient beings. So, in other words, if you think about this, well, here's your teacher. Who's he working for? He's working for us. Right? That's why they're here. No other purpose. Remember years ago when Venerable Pendo Horta had to set up Karuna Hospice, right? So he came from a farm. I think Western Australia had no experience of doing this, okay? And Lama Zopa said, this is what I want you to do, create a hospice in Queensland, in Brisbane. So imagine that, right? You've come off a farm looking after sheep and all that sort of stuff, and you go, now you've got to do this, set up a hospice. And of course, he would be just like us, and he was. He said, oh my God, how do you do that? What do I do? So he went off to see another high lama, and the lama said to him, remember, Pendo, all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas support you. They're working to help you do this. And like he took that on. Karuna Hospice is still functioning here like 50, 40 odd years later. See? Yeah, that's right. You got that's
Yeah,
yeah. And then you
it
should
does.
understand what he means by like, this requires some thinking. So, it requires you to think about the mind itself, having no end. So the historical, first of all, historical Buddha, yeah, he passed away in the slide. But what we talk about is Buddha's mind. Buddha's awakened mind. Mind doesn't die. So all those minds of the bodhisattvas, of the past Buddhas and bodhisattvas, they're still present. They're still carrying out the thing for us. They're manifest in these different ways, Simbhogakaya and Nirmanakaya. So we have the Nirmanakaya aspect right amongst us. As holy as the Dalai Lama, for example. Every other Buddhist monk, highly attained being, is an aspect of Buddhahood itself. They're helping us. And the best way to help, of course, is to reveal the absolute nature of mind. That's the point. We've got to understand how the mind functions and its nature so that we don't keep creating suffering for ourselves awake to a liberated state.
I
Ben.
was just thinking of those.
Yeah, no, well, they're always willing to help, but by opening up, you allow the help to take place,
Yeah,
you allow access.
that faith helped me focus.
Yeah, because it goes against what they call, so faith works against non-faith, like disbelief, doubt. Those things hinder faith. Faith overcomes them.
So, like how Kate said about the imposter syndrome, so if you think, if you have that feeling of the imposter syndrome, like, I'll never be able to do it, I'm just faking it. Actually,
Yeah.
it just takes a little bit of a tweak, doesn't it, to go, well, it's better for me to believe that I have this absolute, true, pure nature. Who cares if it's imposter syndrome? That having that faith in your own mind like that, starting off by, just having this hope, it can grow into something else because it's based on reasoning. So it doesn't matter if it feels like imposter syndrome at the beginning, does it?
No, in fact, I'd say you should turn around and go, well, if that's true what I thought, then you must be the imposter. That's the other way. This thought that I couldn't do it, though, that's the
That's
imposter.
the imposter.
Yeah. Debbie?
And not to bring politics into this, but I feel like if Trump can be president of America, we can definitely become Buddhists. Because he believed he could be, and no one
That's
else,
right.
not that many people in
Now
his
they
class.
do.
And if
That's
he could
right.
do that, I'm assured we can
Yeah.
all definitely become Buddhas.
That's right. Yeah, like a guru is, I mean, that's what they're doing, right? They're doing the same activities that the Buddha did. Those are the activities of any teacher. So the
Yeah.
actions of all the Buddhas are received in the mind of the disciple and through the guru.
Yeah.
The guru is the living embodiment of the Buddha. And this is, the idea is that, and we're going to be that. We are that. We have to be too. This is not like the Christian narrative where, God and there's some sort of hierarchy where we're the lower beings. We're the lower incapable beings that have to really rely on the other. And no, we're just as capable of the fully awakened beings. In fact, we have to awaken. That's our capacity. We have to help all those who don't realize that, who are overcome by their own doubts. And again, but it requires, like thinking about this, reasoning it through. There's more reason you can bring into it, the more stable your faith becomes. So remember, aspirational faith depends upon clear faith. Clear faith depends upon just believing you could. So you go through those different stages. But here, the Buddhas, they manifest in ordinary forms to connect with and guide seekers effectively. And our teacher is the most accessible and helpful embodiment of this enlightened wisdom. So therefore, seeing your teacher as inseparable from Buddha Vajradhara can deepen your own practice and understanding. So again, anything interesting about this? I mean, there is, isn't there? There's lots to think about. Anything, yes?
When I was on talk with Geshe Zopa, so who, most of the time when we were there and all the holy places, he was leading prayers and giving incredible mind-blowing teachings. And then there was one site where there were these Japanese tourists, these young girls, and so they just kind of said hello to him, and so he just transformed into like an influencer. And he chatted with them and he had selfies with them and he said, "Come and visit me in Copan, and you just say that Geshe Zopa invited you and you'll have a room there and it'll all be on my tab." And it was like, and me
Wow.
and Venerable Trophy just like watching Geshe Zopa like weave his magic over. And so they were like, "Wow, yeah, who are you and what are you?" And they're gonna go. I was gonna go, and it turned out so one of them was gonna do humanitarian work in Nepal, and so all of these things was eventuating that you never would have had any idea. And so then off they went. They just thought an ordinary person who was really, really nice, but it was like he was totally clairvoyant about what was happening, and then transformed back into our guru again.
Yeah, so I often think about phenomena like that, like the Mahayana aspect, Mahayana guru, like it's all sentient beings.
In their language.
Yeah, so that's the whole way. And in that story of Lama Yeshe, so he used to go and sit in carriages that were sort of beneath the station to
In the
meet the
train.
common people and on the train journeys, so he could relate to common people, make connections. Be an influencer. And so, I mean, a really good teacher is an influencer, aren't they? But the influence has to extend beyond the classroom. Yeah, and sort of like a willingness and a humility also, isn't it? It's like with everybody and anybody. Demi, you have to
That's what I
ask.
was going to say. The influencer comment was that the motivation is completely different
Yeah.
from like that worldly influence, and you can tell.
That's
So.
right. So I remember one time when we went to see when Lama Zopa came to see us, and there was a huge line of people waiting for him, all holding their cartons. And he came out and went to each person, accepted the carton, asked them their name, asked them where they were from, and then put the carton around their neck and put his forehead up against each of them. Yeah, and I'm just going,
Each
oh my gosh,
individual,
man.
okay.
Like everybody matters to him. You could see it. Yeah, really slow, go down this line.
And the animals as well. If someone had a dog, then he'd also say hello to
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, all sentient beings matter to authentic teachers. So now our next little section is talking about how to develop this perception that the teacher is a Buddha. So this is I just what you were saying, Kate. Yeah, it's a similar type of thing here. So this is how we do it, right? So you can see here I've used this picture of a mirror and the person looking at themselves in it. And some of you do that, don't we? All of us, well, most of us. I know one couple that have no mirrors in their house, right, to stop their own grasping at their images and the sort of. However, it could be very useful too. Either way, it depends upon what you're trying to practice. So, here, like we say, oftentimes we will look at our reflection and we think about ourselves, don't we? If you see faults in yourself, they appear in the mirror. Now, this is not where this is like a person who has they're looking at their own good qualities, right? They're not looking at their bad qualities, but it's possible people do that. Here we go. You look in the mirror and you think, geez, I'm good. In fact, I'm great. I notice my own good quality. No, I don't, but it's quite possible, isn't it? That you look in the mirror and you think about your own good qualities. Most of us, I think, just look at the good appearance, but here we're looking at the qualities, right? You say all these nice things about yourself, right? So when you do that, what also happens? None of the bad qualities appear. Bad qualities can't appear while you're focused on the good. They just don't. It's impossible, in fact. So only the good qualities appear. Change the object from yourself to the mental. When you see the teacher as a Buddha, you can't see the bad qualities. It's impossible. Buddha has no bad qualities. So the same, just in the same way, when you look at your good qualities, your bad qualities don't appear. I challenge all of you to try it out. You'll also notice that when you think of the bad qualities, your good qualities don't appear.
That's
That's how it works, right?
the
Always goes that way. This is why it's so important. If you see that and know that that's what happens, don't look in there and think about your bad qualities unless you have a particular purpose for doing so, right? You're just going to feel terrible. But just like when you see you feel good, you go, yeah, you do. When you look for your bad, you feel bad. So,
actually.
for us, the sentient beings, we have a mixture, don't we? We've got good qualities, we know, but we also got bad. There's times when we should acknowledge our lesser good qualities and do something about
And people with charisma, that's how they get it, because they're totally in tune with all their good
That's
qualities.
right. From their perspective, they have no bad qualities.
Yeah.
That's right. And so what's projected is all good. Confidence, all that sort of stuff. In fact, this is the whole thing of the Vajrayana perspective, right? That's what we're doing. We're seeing ourselves as fully enlightened beings. We don't have problems. There are no problems from the perspective of enlightenment. It's just the wish to help others, right? It's natural. You have this one, you have the deity of a body, and the Buddha, the body of a deity, right? It's perfect. Nothing wrong with you. Everything's good with you. You take that aspect and then you look at everybody else and go, gee, everyone's just like me. They're all deities too. There's nothing wrong with them. They look wonderful. So perceiving a teacher as a Buddha will cultivate a positive perspective, which counteracts the mind's tendency to focus on faults in others while overlooking your own personal shortcomings. The practice encourages students to view their teacher's qualities with the same favorable bias typically reserved for self-perception. This works. Like you said, right? It works out there in the world. The motivation is completely different, as Debbie said. And like I'm saying, please, like try and set this, put a mirror in front of you and think about how great you are, and notice at the very same time whether any negative quality could sneak in. If it does, when it does, you'll find you're not thinking of anything good. It's only one or the other. That's how the mind works. Knowing that again, you can make this choice. What do I want to focus on? It's like Henry Ford saying all those years ago, right? If you think you can't, you can't. If you think you can, you can. It's one or the other. Now here we have this fourth reason. Vajradhara asserts the guru is Buddha. So Vajradhara is like the tantric perspective of Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha, when he's appearing to the sutra aspect, the more common aspect that we're very used to. Vajradhara appears, he's not the golden color of the Buddha, which is really talking about his wonderful qualities. He's a deep blue, which is representing more the empty aspect, like space. But he's adorned with all these gorgeous clothing, earrings, ornaments, showing all those spaces. That's the empty aspect. All the gorgeousness is the perfective, the perfection aspect. All the good qualities have been developed here. Ordinary Shakyamuni is like renunciate, the renunciate, but who's given up all these different qualities and just the gold. Here it's like, yeah, I gave up all that and now I'm adorned with all the perfect qualities and I'm empty. But yet still appearing as a form. A form that we can recognize, but it looks like it's some humanness there, isn't it? We look at these pictures, I mean, it looks like just a blue person. So, they've got to relate to us. If it was just the actual entrance, we couldn't relate to it. It's like, we need something else. So, oftentimes, entrance is described as light, because we can all relate to light. So, here, this might seem a little strange. The Vajradhara's teaching on perceiving teachers as Buddha balances with practical advice against idealization. A nuanced approach which encourages respect for spiritual teachers while acknowledging human limitations. In other words, just sort of emphasizing the importance of realistic expectations in teacher-student relationships and personal spiritual growth. Now, the benefits of this.
Read out the slide.
What?
Just read out the slide.
This kind of viewpoint becomes a blessing in our mind stream. So the recognition that your teacher is the Buddha drives your own inner development with a lot of energy and power. Again, like I said, you've got to balance the two, outer aspect, inner aspect. We're also guru, the mind is guru. This is to truly benefit all sentient beings and achieve enlightenment. We have to develop this unwavering devotion, seeing the guru as a Buddha. It's like sort of seeing the potential in something being the thing. This devotion transforms our mind and opens us to receive profound blessings. I mean, transformations of mind that are profound. Just as the old woman's faith turned a dog's tooth into a sacred relic. Our sincere devotion allows us to experience the guru's enlightened qualities. Buddha Vajradhara said, keep the master's good qualities in mind, never seize upon their faults. Keeping their good qualities in mind, you will reach attainments. Seizing upon their faults, you will not. Which makes perfect sense, doesn't it? It's like sort of having, if you're married or in a relationship, right? If you keep looking at the good qualities of your relationship, the relationship functions well. You start looking at the faults, well, you're going to collapse, right? Why would you want to be in a relationship with all these problems and faults? No point. It's as really simple as that. Like again, you turn the mind towards the positive, keep it away from the negative, unless you have a good reason to put it there. They're willing to bear the suffering that comes with it. Okay, so if I gave you a bottle of poison and put poison on the label and said, drink this, would you find it difficult to not do it? No, you'd just go, are you kidding? It's the same as self-criticism. That's what you do. You put the label, this is poison to me. And then it becomes easy because you know it's poison. You've got to tell yourself it's poison. That'll stop you.
It's a habit, though,
Yeah,
isn't
but like
it?
I said, if it's a habit, you've made it a habit, then I'll give you here. Okay, you've got a habit. Here it is. Here's the
Poison.
poison.
Poison
Drink it.
habit.
It's your habit, isn't
Yeah, associated with something, don't you?
it? Yeah, you're going to go, no. Right? Because it's so obvious to you, it's poison. This is what we're going to do. We've got to make the teachings obvious to us. Then you break the habit. All habits are breakable when you realize you actually acknowledge the harm it does to you. And so the more obvious you can make the harm, the more likely it is you restrain.
So we need to get the opposite habit, which is trying to always focus on the good qualities, becomes a habit,
That's right.
isn't it?
Yeah.
What drives us.
What drives us? That's right. Okay, that's all we've got. Great. You've got enough time to do this last meditation and then we'll finish it. So again, get comfortable in the seat, please. Wriggle around, get your back straight. Relax your shoulders, drop them down. You can do this with your eyes closed or open. You can place your hands wherever you like. To let your body settle, much like a musician might, just as they prepare to play. So you relax and exhale. You've released all tension and distraction. And a space for creating harmony has appeared. Like tuning a complex instrument. Let your intention to view your spiritual teacher with balance be the means to attain enlightenment for yourself and others. I want you to imagine that you have a spiritual teacher and is appearing to you as a master musician. He's skilled in the melody of enlightenment. So seeing your teacher this way can inspire trust. It's like having faith in a virtuoso's guidance. Remember, even master musicians may hit the wrong notes. This practice isn't about perfection. You can focus on the beauty of the music, not the occasional misstep. Now, how might attuning yourself to your teacher's qualities, like tuning to perfect pitch, shift your practice? Well, this shift can open your mind to deeper teachings, like an instrument resonating with sympathetic vibrations. It's like adjusting your mental tuning to align with your teacher's enlightened frequency. Can you recall a time when a change in perspective transformed a difficult situation into a harmonious experience? That memory shows how perception, like tuning, can turn discord into melody. So realizing what seemed dissonant was actually part of a meaningful progression. So, do you think it's possible that you could deeply respect your teacher? He's like a master musician, while acknowledging that all have off days. So in daily life, listen for the positive qualities in your teacher and in others. Be like a musician, appreciating each instrument's unique sound. And as we conclude, take a deep breath. Carry the wisdom of balanced devotion. Exhale. Be ready to play your part in the symphony of your own spiritual path. In your own time, so allow your eyes to flutter open if they're closed. Gently move your body. And so we've come to the end of our class today. It's been focused on faith. We understand how it can be cultivated. And there are these four reasons we could use to develop the faith that sees the teacher as a Buddha. Again, this faith begins by first of all appreciating their own good qualities of kindness. Now, this material we have up on that website, so the FPMT notes from page 27 to 30, there's a Berzin article up there. And there's also meditations from pages 5 to 9. If you want to engage in this practice, you need to memorize those four reasons and become sort of familiar with them. Next week, we'll look at devotion in action. Like how, once we have faith in the teacher, how do we express that faith? As you can see today, it was mainly about thinking, wasn't it? And the different problem-solving skills we can develop. So thank you again for being here, both all the people here and those online. And we have created merit here. You've all put energy into listening and thinking about this. This is merit. So there's no way we can keep it anyway, but so let's give it away. I think that by having this merit, may all beings share in it and may it bring all beings to enlightenment. And please and join me in saying, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the Supreme Jewel, Bodhicitta, not be born, arise, and grow. May that dawn have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to discharge the sorrows of the world. And finally, for the swift return of Lama Zogchen Rinpoche, who embodied all the qualities that we talked about. In holding and spreading the Buddha's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience and deliverance, so incomparable, venerable Guru, to you I make this witness. So again, thank you all for being here. Join us upstairs for a cup of tea, maybe a bit of lunch. And